You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 23rd, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, just steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I haven't quite figured out how to dress a little bit more casual these days. I seem to be stuck in a rut. Every day I wear the exact same uniform. I've got this, like, soft-collared shirt. I guess that's, like, 3 days, 4 days a week now. 1 day a week, a legitimately collared shirt, but always with a either charcoal gray or a heather gray sweater or a dark blue sweater or an off-black sweater. Nevertheless, joining us today, Cliff Schechter, as is our want on Casual Fridays, and special guest in studio, ladies and gentlemen, David Cross of Arrested Development, of, well, I have no idea what he's been up to. I haven't followed his career for the past 20 years. He will be joining us in studio. I kid him. Also on the program today, King Abdullah has died, man of peace, unless you're one of the people beheaded by him or who happened to be.
Sam and I will be sitting Shiva for him this
That's
weekend.
That's right, yes.
It's a lot.
A great man who had the, was not only a man of peace if you were not one of the people who had been beheaded by his regime or had died because of the money they had poured into sectarian fighting all throughout the Middle East.
And, or was rolled over by a tank in Bahrain that they sent in.
Right. Absolutely. And also a man of incredible modesty in face of wealth, if you consider it relative to opulence that is unbelievably imagined. So in other words, where some of his other, like, princes and this and that, they'll fly, like, with 20 jumbo jets into a place with their entourage. He was much more modest and have only, like, three or four, maybe mid-sized jets.
No, they were still jumbo jets.
Okay, but jumbo, but still.
Well,
I mean,
five or six.
You're still talking about 75% less opulent.
No, to go from Jeddah to Riyadh with only seven jumbo jets is very, very modest.
There's been times where I've gone from Jeddah to Riyadh with like 12.
Speaking of which, are we on the same jet for the Shiva this weekend? Or
I've decided to take a different plane. We've got a lot of other things to talk about, but want to remind you that there are two steps to this. As you know, at the beginning of the show, we mentioned that we have won three podcast awards. Best News and Politics.
Three straight.
In fact, we've won every award that we've been eligible for in that category. In other words, we started the show in 2010, but there was only a couple of months. We weren't eligible, obviously. And then the next 3 years we won. So it's they're giving out the 2014 award. First, you need to help us by nominating us for Best Political and News. And then also People's Choice. You get two nominations. And write in Majority Report with Sam Steeder. And then in like a couple of weeks, I think we only have like another week or two with this. And then in a couple of weeks, we're going to ask you to vote. as often as you possibly can. I think, or they allow you. I don't know how many times they allow you to vote, but whatever.
Whatever it is, you should do it. And right. Don't wait to the last minute.
Don't. No, no.
We've lost.
If you have time to nominate us today,
do it today. Do it today.
We've lost two possible, like, really, I mean, Sheldon Silver was a big supporter of ours. We don't know if he'll have time to nominate us. That's, of course, the New York.
That's right.
And then also King Abdullah as well.
Yeah, that was the sad thing we found about Sheldon Silver, who was, of course, indicted on, I don't know, half a dozen, or was
about
it
half a dozen corruption charges?
Was it just half a dozen, or was it like 23 or something?
I can't even keep track, to be honest.
The saddest part about that, of course, was that he was a French level supporter of the program. with all his disposable income, he was supporting this program.
We're not chuckling about it anymore.
No. So, yeah. I mean, it's one thing to say this guy's going to prison, but it's another if he's going to send me an email saying, like, unfortunately, Sam, I'm not going to be able to support the program in the way that I used to. My revenue from the tremendous amount of corruption I was involved in is going to probably dry up now that I'm in under federal indictment.
But hopefully I'll be vindicated and can rejoin.
But hopefully things will turn around for me. Folks, but if you are not under federal indictment and also have – well, all right, look, even if you are under federal indictment – but you do have the financial means to support the program. It is your support that makes this show possible. Please support the show by becoming a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Get 10% off with the coupon code MAJORITY. And on top of that, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it from our Amazon link. That's the least you can do. Go to majorityreportkickback.com. Click on the Amazon link. Bookmark it. Use that as your Amazon link all the time. We get a kickback. You will notice no difference. It costs you nothing. And we get a little kickback. It's not I'm not going to be able to put braces on Saul with it, but it's not going to – it's better than a stick, you know, a poke in the eye.
We're trying to build a full Olympic-sized pool in our jumbo jet to go to this King Abdullah Memorial.
Right.
So if you could help
Saul's
us out.
Saul's braces are so far down on the list. After we get the jet all tricked out. Are you kidding? And I just want to, before we have Cliff on, let me just read you. This is via Felix Salmon. A Tom Friedman quote from Davos, a speech he gave just to... The Arab Spring is failing. Now, I haven't confirmed that this is an actual quote, but Felix Salmon's there, and he's saying that this is a quote from one of the speeches, I think, or panels that Tom Friedman gave. The Arab Spring is failing not for lack of bandwidth, but for the lack of human understanding that can only be forged when someone is 15 minutes late for breakfast and you say, "Thank you for being late." We'll be back in a moment with Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program, as we do on every Friday. We are lucky enough to have him, the man about whom this theme song is about. That Matt does not have fired up. Here's my, I got it on my board.
Cliff Schacht, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schacht, Libertas LLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff.
Why, hi, Sam. How are you?
I'm sorry for the delay on that, but I had to attempt to cover for my for Matt working the board, whose job is basically to just make sure that the sound levels are the same and that one theme song is queued up a day.
Well,
a week, I should say.
He was busy looking for old tweets from King Abdullah.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. He was out there to try to public shame, see like if King Abdullah.
Look, King Abdullah tweeted in 2011, maybe one lashing is enough. You
right.
I mean, like he wanted to sort of totally nail it.
Hashtag just kidding.
Or
hashtag behead.
Hashtag no 72 virgins.
Or Matt was looking for you know, 22-year-old who's in his mother's basement who 2 years ago criticized King Abdullah and now is praising him.
I know, exactly.
King
That's
Abdullah
what I like about
gay.
Matt. He's busy with stuff. He's doing more important stuff than your show, Sam.
I understand.
Quite frankly.
I understand. I that's all I did. It's,
aren't we all?
That's why exactly. That's all I do as I sit up here on my seat is just watch Michael
well, I don't
and
agree
Matt
with that.
With what they're doing today. That's all.
But what Brooks just said there, I mean, this right. is the most important part of my week, so don't be disrespectful to me there, Brooks.
You bring it. I mean, when I call for sound from one of these guys, they just look around like, what are you talking about? All right, let's.
And you guys get paid, so Cliff. I don't want to hear that crap.
They do. Cliff, let's. Let's talk about, well, you know, and we could talk briefly about King Abdullah. I don't know if there's much more to say, frankly, other than the fact that it is Atrios had I don't want to get into the State of the Union and whatnot, but Atrios had a great line was, you know, one can only imagine that if any of the South American leaders that we have either full on demonized or even marginally demonized in our society, if they had sat over a regime that beheaded people or that
yeah.
had like funded, you know, or sent tanks in to quash people or, you know, had overseen a regime where like women
public stonings of
yeah.
women for adultery or and had, I don't know, exported Wahhabism worldwide to the point where they've helped destabilize with their money and the lunatics that come from there, everywhere from Pakistan to Somalia and everywhere in between. Or if, let's say, 15 of 19 hijackers that perpetrated the worst terrorist attack in this country's history came from that Latin American country. I mean, that was Venezuela. Oh, my God.
Right.
But, hey, it's Saudi Arabia. So it's
as long as you don't fully nationalize the oil proceeds and you let some Western companies have a little bit of their share, then I think you are.
As long as they keep China out and give it to us. Look, my analysis is very quick of the whole thing, which is they are a fascist dictatorship. Call them what they will, but that's what you want, but that's what they are. They rule based on a certain religious sect that is one of the most, which is clearly one of the most intolerant, evil forms of religion in the world. And the reason why, even though, you know, we had this discussion on Charlie Hebdo, that was my feeling about that, was that when they're going after guys like this, I support that. And, you know, these guys, I mean, women can't drive there. Women basically can't do anything but be covered head to toe and be property of men. This is a terrible country with terrible people leading, and I don't care because I can't stand the fake stuff when people die. He's dead. Guess what? He's not where he thought he was going, I promise you that. If there truly are a heaven or a hell, I know where he ended up.
I don't know. I'm not sure why people actually think that heaven or hell would be any more sort of just than you know, what we've got on this planet. Do you know what I mean? Like, why everybody assumes, like, well, he was a bad guy, so he's going to go to hell. Well, it could just be that, like, it could just be like, you know what? Surprise! It really is just about how much money you had, and if you can pay your way into heaven,
or it could
you get
be
there.
That he comes, that there is reincarnation, as some of our Asian friends with some of Asian religions believe, and hopefully he comes back as a Saudi woman that's committed adultery.
Mm. Well, all right, there you have it.
Maybe that would teach him something. I don't know.
Cliff Schechter just lost his job at the Washington Post editorial board.
He actually was a Saudi woman that committed adultery.
Oh,
King
Abdul, well, there you go.
Transgender guy. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh dude, boy. You just got yourself in a whole lot of trouble. I don't know that guy.
Hey, what happened?
All right. They can't all be gems, right, Michael? All right, no. So
definitely
let's move in.
Sam.
Okay. okay. Let's go talk about the State of the Union. I mean, obviously, you talked about it a little bit on this program this week, but I want to get your take.
My take is, wow, where was the guy in 2009? There was a narrative. It was middle-class economics. So there was a message. There was an overlying narrative. Oh, my God, who does that? There were individual parts of that overlying narrative, as in, here's what middle-class economics is. You know, paid sick leave. We're the only country among high-income nations that doesn't have this. You know, this. You know, so that's in it. That is important. Raising wages, that is important. And some of the things that Obama has done. And overall, you know, they're, you know, bringing the healthcare cost increases to the lowest level in terms of the increasing price in 50 years or whatever that is a great accomplishment. I'll give President Obama credit where it's due. I like that he was feisty. I like that he was, you know, they clapped when he said he didn't have another election. He threw it back in their faces. This is the guy that I wanted in 2009. It doesn't mean everything was perfect. There were elements, there were things left out of that speech. I think there could have been a little bit more on what happened in Ferguson and some of the difficulties we're having there. He didn't mention gun violence, which is something I care about. And that bothered me. I'm not saying it's perfect. And obviously, he tried to frame within that whole narrative of helping workers the TPP, which is laughable. And is, you know, well, I know that we didn't, you know, in the past we didn't make sure that those labor safeguards and those environmental ones worked, but we're going to do it this time. This time will be different, you know. It sounds like a right winger arguing to, you know, like McCain arguing to go to war again. You know what I mean? Well, this time it's, you know, we figured out all the bugs. So, you know, I have a problem with that part of the speech. I disagree with it. And I think it was, you know, it doesn't fit into the narrative either. But everything else in terms of letting everybody know, you know, where you stand, which is what he's been doing, which is why his approval rating is now 50%. If he could have done this, you know, in August or September, right, where, you know, there's been a narrative to what he's been doing lately, whether it's on climate change or whether it's on immigration, Cuba, which is standing up for people and respecting the will of what is a progressive majority as opposed to caving to either right-wing loons or the sort of centristy gobbledygook that comes out of D.C., and you know, so he, that's what this speech represented to me overall. So overall, I give it high marks. As I said, there are a couple things in there, but there always will be a couple things you criticize. I mean, to me, it's by far the best State of the Union speech he's ever given. So that's where I stand on it.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that largely, and I've spoken about how I'm not terribly happy about the TPP. And of course, all this stuff that he's talking about, at least it's a narrative. And if we're going to judge it as if we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, just insofar as, like, I would rather him talk about this even when it is obviously these a lot of these initiatives can't actually happen and won't even necessarily happen in 2016 when they may have a better chance. But I'm willing to. Concede that I would rather him talk about them when they can't happen than not talk about them when they can't happen. But with that said, if we're going to judge him on that rhetoric, and I went through this on the segment we had with Charlie Pierce, which was on the better half of the other day. So a lot of free listeners have not heard this this complaint of mine was that segment at the end of the speech where he says, you know, we still may not agree on a woman's right to choose, but surely we can agree it's a good thing that teen pregnancies and abortions are nearing all-time lows.
That part was bad, because no, we can't agree on that.
Exactly. And he said the same thing about immigration. Passion's still fine, agree immigration, but we can all see something of ourselves in the striving young student. And
you're right.
No
that
one
undercut some of the rest of his message, because that was going back to when he even introduced it with that whole, we're not a blue country or a red country, or, you know, we're, you know, how everybody is the same in these states, his famous speech in 2004, which sounded great, and I thought, you know, was a wonderful speech, because I didn't actually thought he believed it. I mean, I thought, you know, it was a great way to frame everything. It's an uplifting speech. It's an important thing to say. But you have to know your opposition and know what the situation is that you're dealing with.
But it's also not – look, he may know – see, here's the point, is that, like, he – this still may be a tactic in his mind, okay? I mean, him saying that we can agree that no one benefits when a hardworking mom is snatched from her child in terms of immigration. He went on to say, we may go at it in campaign season, but surely we can agree on the right to vote is sacred. Okay, not only can the Republicans not agree on that, it is part of their electoral strategy to make sure that the right to vote is not treated as if it was sacred, because that's why they're disenfranchising literally hundreds of thousands of people in certain states.
Yeah, the voting rights thing was utterly ridiculous. Like, surely we can agree that everyone should vote? No. That's, in fact, the exact opposite of the stated ideology if you follow a timeline from the post-Civil War, from what were then Southern Democrats and plutocrats right on through, who's become now, you know, through the Southern strategy, has become the core of the Republican Party. And actually, exactly what they believe is that we should restrict the franchise as much as possible to white property-holding men. I mean, they've made that clear. Again and again, you know, I agree with you. But to me, see, here's the difference, Sam, is that was a tactic back then. And I think it was something that, particularly as running as the first African American who might become president, I think it was a good one to sound themes of unity during the campaign. What my problem is he carried it into governing, where it doesn't work and it's a failure. And you know, saying it during the State of the Union, also, we're like, we're well past that. Nobody believes this anymore. It's almost like, really? You know, you're
but it's
right.
Also, it's detrimental. I mean, that's the thing, is that it is detrimental, because you, this is why you don't drive voters out on off-year elections. Because if you simply say, hey, look, we all share some fundamental goals, and you state them, that, you know, that immigrants are human beings, that, you know,
exactly
that we
right.
should not, that, you know, women should have sovereignty over their own bodies. If you state that that's a fundamental goal, and it's what we're really haggling about is how to get there, you're not going to motivate those people in an off-year election.
I think that undermines
don't realize
the rest of the
speech. It's not a fundamental shared goal.
No. That you're exactly right. And I forgot about that part somehow. I think those couple points there undermined the rest of the speech, where he made it clear there were differences, which is, of course, everybody deserves to make a certain amount of money they can live on. If you think you can live on $15,000 a year and you vote against the minimum wage, try it. And that was making it clear, we believe this, you believe that. We believe what 70% of people who voted in, you know, or something of that nature, who voted in states like, excuse me, Alaska, Nebraska, you know, South Dakota, and there was a fourth one, Arkansas, I believe, you know, 70% of people who voted there voted on the minimum wage, wanted to raise it, or somewhere in that area, right? We believe what they believe. You were on that 30% side. That's where you stand. Mm. And that's the thing. I agree with you. The rest of that speech did that. And then he went back to the centristy gobbledygook. And it is detrimental, because it was a good thing to say when he was trying to become president, when he was trying to get the nomination, and he was trying to frame things as, I'm the guy that wants to bring everybody together, which would make the other side look bad initially. But there's a point where you have to start saying, we're for this and you're for that. You're bad and we're good. And that was a long time ago.
And we should also say, hey, look, the bottom line is, in 2004, the Republican Party was at least the leadership. You know. Let's remember, John McCain ran in 2008 and was still for immigration reform. There was in 2007, the Voting Rights Act was unanimously reauthorized, and it has since been gutted, and the Republicans are doing nothing about it.
That's because racism is gone.
That's in 2004. You know, there wasn't this notion that you would have it was the right for a woman to get an abortion was far less curtailed in 2004 than it was today. I mean,
And you know, right now with what we're going to talk about today, what they've tried to do federally, but I can tell you it's going on in states, you know, all over the country. I mean, they tried here in Ohio to pass this ridiculous heartbeat bill, which is clearly unconstitutional, so much so that even the national or the Ohio version of the National Right to Life opposed it, and about 10 right-wing Republicans didn't vote for it because these people who are right-wing loons have the good sense that if this goes to the court, they're going to lose, and that this is a clearly unconstitutional – but that's where they are. You know, that's where they are. They want to try to pass these fetal heart. I mean, they're going throughout the country. So, no, clearly we don't all agree, because these are people who still have this mindset that if we only.
Are you there?
What was that?
I don't know. Are you hearing something?
I was. Did you hear something?
No, we just heard a little bit of a buzz. You're fine.
Okay. That if we only ban abortion, then it will go away. That's still their mindset, that we need to punish women. Women shouldn't have the right to control their bodies, that we should lecture to them what they get to do and what they don't get to do in not quite Saudi Arabian fashion, but not so much better. And we're going to bring our religious values into politics and cross that wall. That's what they believe, that they believe something either religiously, or they believe that women are sluts who have abortions, which is a lot of what I believe it is. And so we should all believe the same thing as them. That's what it is.
So let's move to some of the responses. What struck me, and we've gone through the whole, Joni Ernst is a Cylon, et cetera, et cetera. Although I have to say that she really does if you look at that, her response again, and just watch, like the look, she really knows how to sort of, was very good at sort of emotionally shifting her perspective when she was talking about something that was supposed to be sad. She looked sad. But what struck me...
But she was very robotic. I mean,
Yes, but...
She was trying out for, the home shopping network.
Yes, but I'm not convinced that doesn't work with a huge percentage of the American public, frankly. But leaving that aside, what I found really interesting was Rand Paul and Ted Cruz going full-on populist. I mean, you were hearing... a lot more about wealth inequality, not just from the president, but from the Republicans. And you're hearing it from Mitt Romney. I mean, it's on some level, what struck me is that there were basically two entities responsible for the tone of President Obama's speech and the broad aggregate of Republican response. And that is Occupy Wall Street and Newt Gingrich. And I'll tell you why I say Gingrich. Occupy Wall Street, I think it's quite obvious. Newt Gingrich nearly knocked Mitt Romney out of the race. There were two things that really inhibited Mitt Romney in his general election. One was when in February or March, I can't remember what it was, the Obama administration released those new rules on contraceptive. Rick Santorum dragged Mitt Romney to the deep end of the pool of the anti-contraception pool, dragged him down there, and that hurt him for the rest of the campaign. And the other thing was when Sheldon Adelson ponied up a couple of million dollars to Newt Gingrich, and Newt Gingrich cut
him in there, yeah.
That 30-minute-long documentary on what a vulture capitalist Mitt Romney was. And I'm convinced that's why we're seeing this in the Republican Party now, is because this is the way that a guy like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and maybe a couple others think they're going to go at Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney. And so everybody's in the boat. Now, of course, we're not going to hear anything about this stuff, the day after
Even
the
Chris
election.
Christie, because remember, if Chris Christie runs, there's his brother, you know, who the I'm trying to remember if he had a private equity firm or whatever. There's a lot of there in terms of graft and favors and, you know, all sorts of other stuff with the SEC investigating. So Christie's another one who they could easily, you know, especially when they can kind of peg him as a Northeastern guy, they can turn him into that too, and they will.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's fascinating that we're hearing so much talk about this, about wealth inequality, and this economic populism. And, of course, it's also annoying because Democrats feel that it's relevant now, but they gave up on it prior to the 2014 election, you know, 7 months before the election, 8 months before the election.
Yeah. Remember when you and I were having those conversations, how it seemed like they finally got it and then they dropped the whole thing?
Yep.
I mean, I think that that's important. And I think that the president standing up during the State of the Union speaking sort of strongly on these issues, and when you see that Mitt Romney's already at a point where he's claiming he's going to run as the anti-poverty candidate, who's trying to help the middle class, clearly, you know, the things that Elizabeth Warren has been doing, others also, you know, that sort of, you feel that sort of cultural shift on economic issues. It's happened. I mean, and Occupy is a part of it, but there are many different parts of it that clearly, I mean, it's hard to sort of deny when one study after another keeps coming out and showing, and then you start finding that the top 1% in the world is going to have like more wealth than everybody else, you know, and things of that sort. I mean, you know, it's ripe picking, you know, it's very easy to hit this stuff. But you have to provide, at least if you're on our side, a positive vision of things. And this agenda has been lying around there waiting for people to pick it up, or waiting for somebody in a presidential level. And, you know, finally Obama did that for the most part, obviously not with TPP. But with, you know, speaking about things like paid sick leave, you know, I'm sitting here like, why haven't I heard that before from him? You know, I mean, these are he had been speaking about these issues constantly, hammering them constantly, hitting the other side and contrasting where the Democrats stood. It wouldn't matter if most of that stuff, even when the Democrats still controlled the Senate, couldn't get most of that stuff through, even if they got it through the Senate somehow.
Well, they're proving they're proving now they're thinking that it has a value, at least in terms of rhetoric. And, you know, the fact is that it also creates expectations, which is what I appreciate. You know, you start to raise the level of what people anticipate and expect from their politics. And so
you also engage people who otherwise wouldn't be engaged.
Yep. I'm excited at the notion that, I mean, I pulled out of the bottom drawer of my bureau the phrase metamorphosis, because you recall Mitt back in 2012 said, I'm not worried about the real poor because we have
safety net programs. For
and and I will say this too. I also distinctly remember back in 2011, you and I talking in like the summer of 2011, saying,
wow,
you know,
Mitt
Romney could be difficult because he's starting to talk like a populist. And then he had to abandon that as he got into his campaign. But back then he was talking about he was talking this populist rhetoric, and we thought that might be very problematic for the president, but he had to abandon that as the race started. All right, so let's move a little bit to what has just taken place in the Senate this week, because, I mean, and you know, you could see this with Joni Ernst thing. They got nothing to talk about, the Republicans, and they can't even seem to.
14 of them that responded.
They just don't seem to have – they seem to have lost – like they seem to have lost their way a little bit. I mean, and they – you know, they had a vote on whether or not climate change was real this week, which was – they voted – they managed all to vote for the resolution.
It's real, but we can't – but we're not sure if humans are causing it.
Right. Well, they all voted for it being real and not a hoax. And then, or except for one, I think.
Was that Inhofe?
Inhofe actually voted for it being real and not a hoax.
Whoa.
But he shifted to saying the notion that it's man-made is a hoax, and therefore that we can do anything about it. And those next two amendments failed.
But just moving him to that point, that's a pretty big thing that he felt compelled to be there.
Well, God will do what God will do, Cliff, and I think you know
that's
that. Same thing on Iran, apparently.
God will do what God will do there?
Yeah, I, of course.
It's kind of like how God deflated those New England Patriots balls, right?
Let's not get into that.
Okay.
Let's not talk about that. I don't want to ruin my Super Bowl, please.
Okay, sorry.
We had a day after the – I think it was a day after the State of the Union, Bob Menendez had the following to say. The more I hear from the administration and its quotes, the more it sounds like talking points that come straight out of Tehran. And it feeds into the Iranian narrative of victimization when they are the ones with the original sin. I don't know what the frick that means. An illicit nuclear weapons program going back over the course of 20 years. That's the original sin that they are unwilling to come clean on. So I don't know why we feel compelled to make their case when, in fact, they get to cheat in a series of ways and we don't get to worry about the perceptions. First off, are they signers to the nuclear program? They are. Okay.
When do we get rid of that guy? I mean, we can't do better than that from New Jersey.
Well, you know, Chuck Schumer also, same way. I mean, this is all about, I don't know what it's about with
Menendez.
I can certainly guess what it's about.
I know we're not allowed to say it, but we know what it's about.
Oh, I can say it. It's because of wealthy right-wing Jews who are funding Schumer and see Iran as the greatest threat in the world. And also, I would also say, see peace with Iran as probably also threatening to their perception
of Israel. And help me along here, Sam, because you are smarter than I am. I think we've definitely made sure to.
I'll talk smack about Jews more than you.
I will. Fuck them. I'm just kidding. Love Jews. But here's the thing. So yes, with Chuck Schumer, it is. It's connections to some conservative Jews, or you know, some people that are sort of more socially liberal, domestically liberal. You know, your Chaim Sabans, that kind of thing, right? Okay. So that's with him. With Menendez, I understand the Cuba thing. But what I don't get is why he's so conservative on Iran. And, you know, I mean, is it – I guess maybe he shares some funders
I would imagine.
With Schumer? I mean, maybe that's where it is, because otherwise there's no – you know, there's not that personal thing like there is with Schumer in Israel and like with Menendez.
Oh, no,
Cuba.
I think it's probably – I think it's the same donor base is basically what it comes down to. They have the same – they get the same – you know – New Jersey, you know, those it's the same same donor base.
That's true, right? Like sort of like how Andrew Cuomo and Chris Christie are supported by all the same people.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's definitely it. And look, here's the bottom line where we are with Iran, just to remind people that a deal was forged, I guess, back in November 20. Oh, OK. So over a year. And whatever, 2 or 3 months ago, in November of 2013, there were five nations that came together. Wait, the U.S., France, Germany, Britain, Russia, and China, and made an agreement with the Iranians that basically did three things. It stopped the progress of the what we perceived as the most sort of delicate or nervous-making aspects of Iran's nuclear program. It provided for more access to their nuclear facilities so that the AIE could actually go in every day and IAEA could go in virtually every day and check those facilities. And then it also gave time to negotiate a long-term settlement with Iran. And what Menendez and Schumer and one or two other Democrats, mostly Republicans, want to do is scuttle that deal by putting new sanctions on the Iranians.
Right. And it's not just – obviously, those same right-wing interests that are affecting them – are clearly, you know, as we know, Adelson and company are the ones behind Boehner, who is in an amazing breach of protocol, inviting Netanyahu to come speak here, and Netanyahu, in an amazing breach of protocol, just like when he endorsed Romney, is going to do that. I mean, that really bothers me. I can't tell you. These guys have undermined so much of you know, the decorum is not the right word, but democracy needs to operate on things beyond laws. On respect for a political culture where you say that there are things you can and can't do if you care about your country. And we can't be speaking with five different voices about what our foreign policy is. We just can't. There's a reason why that's meant to be the chief executive. And Boehner doing that is unbelievable. You know, I don't think it's gotten the kind of backlash even it deserves. It's gotten a lot, but it deserves more. I mean, the founders would have called that treason.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty stunning. I mean, I don't know what one does at that point. But you would hope, and I haven't seen it on the news, people saying like this is really unprecedented and problematic. But you know, hope springs eternal, right?
I mean, not been done before. And the problem is when they do that, Republicans, kind of like when they first started using the filibuster regularly and for non, you know, not just for emergencies or whatever they deemed it to be, then it became a regular thing. And now it's a part of the process. That's how they do it. Somebody breaks that across that line, and then it happens a little more, and then it becomes normal. And if that happens with this, you know, I mean, you just can't do that with foreign policy. You can't. We can't operate that way. And so it's just another reminder.
Had the Democrats, had Nancy Pelosi done this in 2007,
oh my God.
I mean, can you imagine what would happen? I mean, she'd
be a traitor. Fox News 24/7 that she's a traitor and she should be tried for it.
They'd be building the gallows, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just briefly tell us what happened with this anti-abortion vote in the House yesterday. There was a march. Was it yesterday or the day before? There was a march
Roe versus Wade anniversary.
Right.
Up.
And so there's a march for life.
They call it a march for life. I call it a march for men that want to tell women what to do with their bodies, but don't care much about life when it's war, gun violence, the death penalty, or a variety of other things. I think it's a little bit too long to be catchy, but that's what I think the march should be renamed. And so, yeah, they did that. And this bill, and they're, again, as I said, this is the kind of bill they're trying to pass in states around the country. And after 2014, they control so many more chambers. One of the unnoticed things that day is how many seats we lost in state legislatures, right, which was astounding. But what they're trying to do, and they're going to do this federally, is to pass this bill that limits abortion to 20 weeks. But beyond that, the key thing here is they just can't get away from the legitimate rape thing. Because when what's his name, goofball from Missouri, his name isn't even coming to me, which is a good thing,
right,
I think, said that phrase, that wasn't just a random phrase. That's how these guys talk to each other, all right? Remember, you remember when Ron Paul said an honest rape? I mean, these are actual terms that they use with each other, and what this means is they think all these, in their view, again, slutty, quote-unquote, women are claiming that they were raped who weren't because they use abortion as birth control and yada, yada, yada. In fact, I think Phyllis Schlafly said it's usually a case of buyer's remorse is the way she put it. Mm. Wonderful, wonderful woman that she is. So it's not enough, the 20-week ban. They have to insert language in there that literally is like out of Margaret Atwood, okay? I mean, you know, now we're going to have the abortion police, it looks
yes,
like.
Yes, if you claim it's a rape and incest exemption, you need to report the crime to a law enforcement agency, and you have to basically have them adjudicate whether or not you really got raped.
That's right. So, I mean, while you're going through this kind of trauma and dealing with the fact that you maybe have been made pregnant by somebody, you've got to make sure, and maybe been given sexually transmitted diseases for that matter, you've got to make sure during that period of time that it is official that you've been raped. Because God forbid somebody misplaces the paperwork or screws something up or whatever, then, you know, congratulations. You get to be with your rapist's baby forever. It is, you know, as demeaning and, you know, as much of an attack as these guys have launched on women in other ways, this may be the worst. I mean, again, this is Margaret Atwood type stuff. Mm. This is like, you know, this is that future where women go back to, I guess, what the theme of the show. They become like they are in Saudi Arabia in this country and have no control of anything and are told what to do. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And so even Republican women, they should tell the Democrats something about what to run on and what to know to talk about around
well,
the country.
Now,
because when Renee Elmers is offended by something, I mean,
all right, wait a second.
Renee Elmers
let's
need to speak a little slower and clearer so us women can understand.
This is she's not offended by anything. Renee Elmers, the reason why she did this is because they are very worried about 2016. If Hillary Clinton is on the top of the ballot, that means that women
no,
and single women coming
out.
I
agree, Sam. I don't mean she's personally offended as in
– No, they're worried about it in
feelings.
Terms of
– She's
but,
offended politically. She understands how toxic this is.
But
women
wait a second.
Are too stupid to get it.
let me just say, Aaron Cameron from MSNBC points out that in 2013, the exact same bill passed in the House with all but six Republican members voting yes, including Elmer's. So the bottom line is,
it's toxic political toxicity today.
Right, right, yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
I don't believe, with the exception of maybe a handful of them, I don't think there's almost anything that could be too right-wing. I mean, we've got a bunch of careerists sell out, you know, people that believe in sorcery. And are, I mean, you know, the Republican Party is a cult.
Sorcery is real.
Particularly the congressional wing, which is really the military wing of that party at this point. So I don't believe most of them could be offended by anything, but it offends their political sensibilities, and there are a few others, because women who understand this, at least they have some understanding. These women are still crazy because they're right-wing Republicans, but they do have some understanding on a political and, you know, and really a personal level how this might play with Republican and independent women out there.
2 years out from this election. All right. Well, listen, Cliffy, got to run. As always, a pleasure to have you on the program. We will talk again next week.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much.
Take care, bud.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, joining me in studio, David Cross. You know him from Mr. Show with Bob and Dave. Maybe you know him from Arrested Development or the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret, or, like my daughter, from Men in Black 1. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report in studio. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program. He's desperately seeking.
No, what
you looking to dial something
to
up?
To turn the volume down in my headphones.
Yeah. Oh, well.
What could that possibly mean?
Signal.
What do you think I'm doing?
I don't know. a guy who's known for his meaningless hand gestures, David Cross, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said earlier, you may know him from Mr. Show with Bob and Dave.
If you're over 35.
98% of our audience here is actually over the age of 58, according to our surveys. So they may know you, Bob and Dave, and also Arrested Development.
If you're between 20 and 50.
One of the things that Dave is also known for is his encyclopedic knowledge of the demographic breakdowns of every product he's ever put out.
Every product you put out.
Increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret.
That's pretty much across the board.
Across the board. And like I said, my daughter, Myla, knows you from Men in Black.
Okay.
She asks me every day usually who my guests are, and I'll say something like, oh, Johan Hari, who wrote this book, Chasing the Scream, or Erwin Chemerinsky, who wrote The Case Against the Supreme Court. And she just sort of looks at me, and David Cross. Oh, from Men in Black.
Right, yeah.
And she has not been introduced to your entire oeuvre. But also, Hits.
Yes, now Hits.
Yeah.
It's a movie.
All right.
Yep. You want me to? You want me to?
That's it.
Do the work on this. All right, fine.
So Hits, David.
Yes.
No. Why? Well, we'll talk about the movie. But what have you? Let's talk about the movie.
All right.
I watched it.
You don't. So let's dispense with the chit chat, the pleasantries, the.
No, I like to. I like to do a little bit of both. I mean, we can. Did you want to talk about the weather or what? What's going on?
No, no.
Are those new tats?
No, you've seen these. You might not have seen that one.
What's that one?
We're not above 35.
This is the cover of my favorite book, the original first print.
What book?
Masters of Atlantis.
Oh, all right.
Charles Portis.
Why is that your favorite book?
What do you mean? I mean, it's.
Haven't you given it any thought? You just slapped the tat on there? You don't even think about why you like that book?
Of course, I've thought about it. It's. He's my favorite author, and it's my favorite book of his, of which I've loved all of his books. But I guess because of the subject matter, which kind of deals with human gullibility and fallibility, and it spans something like 40, 50 years, maybe longer. A guy who ends up being a figurehead. For a cult, a religious cult that has a really big heyday and then dwindles to nothing. But it's his life, and he's kind of a simple guy. It's great. It's a great book.
If I ever get a chance to read fiction again, I will check it out.
Yeah,
I don't have much time for that anymore.
That's too bad.
It is too bad.
You found 2 hours to watch Hits.
I did, actually.
Should have read the Masters of Atlantis.
I did.
Much more.
What are you pointing at? Oh, sort of sounds like being there.
Is that true?
I don't know. No, it's
there's a similar quality. It's not like it at all. He's not that simple. I'd say the guy, the protagonist in Being There, is
he's
slightly retarded.
He's quite simple.
Yeah, and this guy isn't.
Just that idea of people projecting qualities.
Yes, and not just projecting qualities, but people who are manipulating this person for their own less than altruistic reasons. Yeah,
I mean, there's an element of that in Hits on some level, to the extent that ability for people to rise.
I actually gave Matt Walsh, who's the one of the leads in it. Who's playing the character that you're referring to, I gave him Dog of the South, which is another Portis book, and said, read this. This is the idea for Dave, who's the name of the character he plays.
All right, well, let's do the quick synopsis of the movie. I have to be careful. I'm really bad with spoilers. But basically, it's the story of a guy upstate, or really, I guess,
There's
a young woman upstate.
There's
a lot of characters.
They're weaving stories, but they all center around really those two, the father and the daughter.
Right, and the daughter wants to be a daughter wants to be a hit, I guess a huge celebrity. Ostensibly,
she wants to be famous. She doesn't care how she gets there, which becomes, you know, I don't want to spoil it either, but it becomes clear she doesn't care. And she, you know, that's my observation of what our culture has become. And she feels entitled to it, and I get it. I get why people of that generation, because that's the world they've been brought up in, where you know, and she just wants it. She feels like she'd be a good famous person. She should. She's got more to offer as a celebrity, not for any defining talent. Just she should be famous and rich. And her father is a very simple guy who basically has no desire for any of that, doesn't get it, but in a sense of irony becomes famous, and she's not becoming famous.
And he also realizes the value of it at one point too, right? I mean –
Sort of. I don't think he really – I think he's happy to go along with it. He just wants his potholes filled. He gets famous for, and I don't mean like massively famous, but he gets a rant of him at town hall, of which there are many, goes viral because the son of the woman at the town hall sees it on YouTube. Right. Shows these this couple that he sells weed to who are completely, they represent the other side of this thing. And he's, you know, they're like this hipster couple in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and he decides to make it his cause to go up and fight the man, and things get out of control.
And it's really, I mean, it's not so, I mean, to a certain extent, it's his cause, but there's also sort of, it is talking about there is a sort of internet marketing sort of like there, I don't know how to really articulate what that is, but it's partially about politics, but it's also simply a part about like sort of the entrepreneurial, we're going to go up there with all our internet tools. And then that becomes a huge competition between other internet outfits. One of my favorite lines is at one point where he tries to trump another rival sort of group by saying, like, I'm from Greenpoint. And they say, well, I'm from Bushwick. And then
but he also goes, oh, like, that's, you're cute with your Greenpoint. We're out of Bushwick. And that just stops the conversation.
Yeah. I think, you know, outside of Brooklyn, I'm not sure how many people get that specific joke. But
you know, we screened in London we went to the Sundance Festival there, and I'd say it did even better there than it did in Sundance in the States. And it did well. It screened well. But I don't think you have to know the specifics. I think you get the idea.
Well, like, that's the thing. It's like Adomian who plays that character, James Adomian, who I think, you know, people might remember. He did a lot of great Bush impressions during the Bush years.
He's a very good actor. In this.
Yes.
He's so
excellent.
Believable. Yeah.
And you can tell what the dynamic is. And so you don't need to necessarily know why it was that he was deflated, but that he was deflated by that. But, you know, it's funny because you don't even have a Twitter handle.
No, I'm
not on really on Facebook, so I don't really know who else is not on Facebook.
I was on Facebook to promote, and I went reluctantly, I got on Facebook to promote, you know, at the insistence of everybody to promote Todd Margaret, the second series. And
which, incidentally, got picked up for a third season.
Yeah, well, 3 years later, I had no desire. Well, I mean, if you know how the show ends in, you know, nuclear holocaust.
That's not necessarily wrapping anything up.
Well, that's what I said. I was like, they approached me about, you know, I think it did okay when it first came out. But then on Netflix, it's just mushroomed. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's gotten this huge cult thing you know, and as I said, it'll be 3 years between the series two and series three when it finally airs. And I was like, how, you know, so they approached me about doing a third series. And I was like, no, it's over. The story's done. And then out of, you know, respect to the folks at IFC, and I really like them a lot. They're really great people to work for. But I said, look, I'll approach the other writers and see if they have any ideas. I have zero ideas to make this viable. I certainly don't want to do a prequel or whatever. And then one of the other writers, this guy Mark Chappell, came up with, within an hour of sending the email out, came
pay
up
us
with,
a lot more money. And then
unfortunately, that's not part of it. That's the budget for that. Business. First of all, the budget is so small. Then you go to London where the exchange rate really kicks your ass, and, right. and we're doing it for pennies. But anyway, Mark Chappell came up with this brilliant idea of how to do it. So,
well, let's hear it.
No, I can't. I can't give it away. I will once it's completely different. It will eventually become Todd Margaret, and the character will become the Todd Margaret you're used to, but not initially. It's a completely different world. And I can't give away too much, but it's never been done. It's a
let's
crazy
just play
idea.
It like you did. Breaking news. Title this Cross Reveals What Third Season of Todd Margaret Will Be On.
It's already been tweeted out.
You jumped on that. You jumped on that. I was going to give you that at the end of the.
It sounds like a Jew farted.
That's. Oh, no. Oh, no. Let's just. Okay.
I just saw one. Wait. Please. Wait.
Oh, God. All right. Don't look at my code.
Sam's passcode seems to be. All right.
Okay.
Wait, I don't want to get this one.
Don't piss.
Oops, sorry.
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
That's from the outlaw Josie Wales.
I don't
know
like
if you
it.
Remember. Which brings us into the idea that we would actually title that YouTube in such a way to get hits. It brings us back to hits.
You just got the double meaning.
I just got the double meaning. And
how you like it, guys? Did you get the double meaning?
I didn't see the movie, but from the ad, I was able to get the double meaning.
I didn't.
Sam saw the entire movie and just now got.
I got confused by her desire to be a
hit,
music hits, right. like a hit music, right?
Right.
And
there you go.
Am I the only one who got it?
The movie's. Let's be honest.
You're not the only one who got it. Sam's the only one who didn't get it.
Let's be honest. The film is too subtle, and so I think it's clear. And we'll talk about the model that you're using afterwards, but okay. I want to stay on this. So you're not on Facebook, but
I am now. I want to clarify. I was on for Todd Margaret. I let it lapse. I have no desire to be on social media. I don't care for it. It's not the waste of time I choose when I do waste my time. I choose to waste my time differently.
But here's the thing that is interesting to me about it is that and I use Twitter is an invaluable tool for me.
I get it. I'm not disparaging it. I get it totally. I see why it's
– what I have seen in the comedy world – because I basically follow mostly journalists and people who are writing about politics now. But I still have – I still sort of observe what's happening in the comedy world.
You have a human desire to be entertained.
No, I don't actually. It's really more sentimental than anything else.
Sentimental?
But I mean, you know, these
are you excited about the upcoming 50 Shades of Grey movie?
Sam, to be honest with you, I honestly didn't even know. Yeah. I didn't even know about it.
Do you get the double meaning there, Sam?
No. But there has been something like the idea of Facebook and Twitter as means in which to brand yourself and the entrepreneurship involved in it. I see it mostly.
Entrepreneurship? Are we going to let that slide, guys?
What is it? Entrepreneurship? Is that not a word?
Is it an entrepreneurship?
He's done so many good W impressions over the years that it's seeped in.
Wait, the entrepreneurship? Yeah, okay.
Entrepreneurship.
The process of starting a business.
I think you were trying to say entrepreneurial.
No, the entrepreneurship of it.
No, it's like an entrepreneurial activity. It's fine.
Well, yes,
it's
but okay. The entrepreneurship is an adjective, which does which
is it an
which,
adjective?
Yeah. Adverb.
Yeah. No.
I have a joke.
Wait a second. So the point
I would
being
like to share
that
it at some point.
You see this people building their careers off of it, comedians building their
surprise. Yeah.
You see people building their careers off it. No?
Yeah, of course. Yes. Or certainly.
But you don't witness it. You're not on Twitter.
Yes, people use Twitter to advance their careers. Definitely.
It's a very real, viable tool. But to me, it seems like it will be, and I don't know if this is just wishful thinking, but it will be discovered that I think if you for people who quantify likes, or followers, I don't think that is going that necessarily translates to lucrative money-making possibilities that publishers and movie studios and TV studios think it does. I think that will be discovered to not the people who do monetize their Twitter fame or their Facebook fame, and I put that in quotes, because liking somebody is just about the laziest, easiest thing you can do, to click on like or a thumbs up symbol. I don't think that necessarily translates. Like people who get, a $5 million book deal because they have a million Twitter followers.
And we should say they don't get $5 million, but they do get huge. I mean, I think you're right.
I think we're going to soon see that, that doesn't translate necessarily to $5 million worth of.
Right. Twitter is definitely not as good of a measure as, let's say, Facebook, which is much more easily monetizable.
I'm using them
interchangeably.
It's sort of the entertainment equivalent of slacktivism, I feel like you're saying. Like that the idea of this notion of substituting internet activism for.
I think the point is that there are people out there now who will entertainment executives who will say like, this guy's got X amount of Twitter followers. That must mean they actually have these amount of fans. And this is
and those fans will then go and pay $20 at the theater. If I give this guy, like there's a guy, there was just a story, 2 weeks ago in New Yorker about the Vine, these kids who have Vine channels. Who have 6 million followers, getting these big deals to
Shit, my dad says became a sitcom off of Twitter,
a failed sitcom.
Yes,
because you can't replace good writing or ideas, which we found out or they found out.
I don't think that's ever going to end at one point, because I always think that like, what's that noise? Oh, well, I hope nothing crashes into the window. But I think like that is never going to be fully replaced, because the people, the television executives and film executives, if you have some metric, even if it's false, is always going to give them like something they can rub, and it's their magic elixir.
I do think, yes, that will always be the case and always has been the case. But I do think the current practice of throwing millions of dollars and a studio and production facilities behind somebody who has a bunch of Vine followers, I think those days are soon to be over.
It's been a while though. Like
it has been a while.
You can even go back as far as MySpace and how like people got music deals off of there. And
music deal is I'm showing you here's my song. MySpace is a great facilitator for that, and now I can see your song. Other people are seeing it, so
that's the end product. Thing. It's not. Yeah. They're using Vine as something that's predictive, as opposed to where just playing music is. Well, that's actually what the end product is, and we can measure the popularity of what the end product we're going to sell. I mean, the thing that drives me nuts on Twitter, and that I have seen, and this relates specifically to comedy. Is there is also this quality of like people hold back their criticism of stuff to like there is a within the comedy world, and this is maybe just a very narrow slice of something, but there isn't, you know, short of Andy Kindler, who you know, really, like, Andy, honestly, yeah. You see, there's this sort of like the same thing that bred mediocrity that I sensed when I was in sort of television, which was like, you know, everybody in the room sort of saying like, I'm not going to say anything if you don't say anything mm-hmm. about how bad this is. We'll just let the thing keep going. There's it breeds that on Twitter. I'm not on Facebook, but Twitter breeds that, it seems to me, within the comedy community, where everybody's like, I'm going to be very supportive of what you're doing because, look, this is a vehicle in which we drive followers and this and that. And it doesn't necessarily impact Hollywood, let's say. You know, you can't tell from a Twitter follower who has 500,000 people. But it does impact you if you're like a touring stand-up or if you're doing a small show, online show or whatnot.
Well, I think those things are different because the executives in the room that you brought up who were like, we're not going to say it's bad. We're not going to speak that out loud. It doesn't matter if the product's bad. It just matters if the product is sellable. So they don't give a shit if it's bad. Why would they care? I mean,
or
there's
even
plenty
sellable.
Of bad TV
I mean,
there.
I think it's,
they don't care.
I guess what I'm saying is that there is a sense of like my fortune is now tied into your fortune in a way that wasn't existed before social media.
Right.
So it's not just that the television executive is making a difference, is parsing between what is quality and what is sellable, but it's rather like it's corporatized it.
Yeah.
Insofar as you're in a bureaucracy, and I'm not going to fuck with that guy because that guy needs to help me move up in the ranks too.
We're all in the same boat.
Exactly.
All right. Let's hear your joke.
Oh, great. So a couple of middle-aged Jewish ladies are out for lunch.
That's racist.
I of
course, sexist. It's sexist, ageist, and anti-Semitic.
You got ageist in there already?
Yeah. You made a point to say middle-aged. Let's see if it has anything to do with the joke.
I think we'll get some class in there as well for the punchline. Let me reset before the interruption. Okay, so a bunch of middle-aged Jewish ladies are out for lunch, and the waiter comes in the middle of the meal and he says, is anything okay? That's one of my favorite jokes.
Yeah, I don't know why they have to be middle-aged.
Why wouldn't they?
Just say
I don't
Jews.
Think so.
I didn't even listen.
Just say some Jews are at lunch.
But Jews are at lunch?
Yeah.
I don't think that I think that
and
makes
really,
a lot
really,
less funny.
And really elongate the J.
See,
you know.
That's the funny
so
part.
Some Jews are eating lox and bagels, and they're complaining, and there's knishes, and they're begging the kids to go to law school. And then you really want to hit that Jew point. I get it. I have a different angle on it.
All right, moving on from that. But we should also say that on Hits, you're distributing in a strange thing.
Mom!
Have you not heard this?
No.
Mom!
What is this?
Why did you do that to me?
Oh, is that the fat guy who plays video games who goes freaks out?
No, this is...
it's on YouTube. There's a guy...
Reparative therapy. This is like a therapist who helps people not be gay anymore, and he takes his tennis racket and bangs it on the couch.
Because that made me a little gay, hearing that.
It should have actually made you less gay.
Yeah, it has the reverse effect.
Back to the lab.
Wait, what is it? Mom, why did you do that to me?
Yeah.
So he's gay because his mom...
did something to him. Well, that's how you get gay.
Yeah, no, I know.
You're not aware of that.
That's science.
And the way you shake it off is to hit a tennis racket against the couch.
Mom, why'd you do that to me? And then he has an actress play the mom who pops out of a door and goes, well, I'll tell you. I'll tell you, kiddo.
He actually has her just sit behind the couch and talk back to her as if she was the couch. So you're releasing this on BitTorrent. Is this the first movie that's actually – like is BitTorrent moving into – tell us about that.
This whole thing came about, and simultaneously with BitTorrent, it will be in – hopefully if we hit our Kickstarter thing, which it looks like we may, we will be in theaters. And right now we've got, I think, 35 small markets, and that will expand based on the money we raise just to get in and rent theaters and pay the staff and get – you know, copies in the format they need to be in to the theaters and pay for a slight bit of marketing to let people know it's there. But it's pay what you want.
Too bad you don't have Twitter. You could market it cheaper.
No, it's true. It's pay what you want.
In the theaters.
In the theaters, yeah. and on BitTorrent. And it's the first movie that's being released on BitTorrent like this, in this way. And it came about out of, you know, we went to Sundance, as I said, and we it screened well, and we got, I mean, as the credits were rolling, we got two offers, and then some more came in. But something that I have zero control over is, you know, the producers, and this is what every movie does, basically. You hire a sales agent, and then the sales agents deal with distributors far away from you and, you know, over the phone or email or in a bar or coffee shop or restaurant. They make those deals. And the deals that we were being offered were very typical for this kind of movie. It's a, you know.
They could make the deals in like an office too, like a conference room.
Not legally, no. And the deals are, you know, they're trying to secure the best money and the best deal for them, so they'll make the most money they can, because they get a cut, obviously. The distributors get a cut and the sales agents as well. And they were all very standard deals, basically plays in New York and L.A. for a week, and then, you know,
goes to aftermarket VOD, Netflix, yep. Amazon, iTunes.
And that's it.
Right.
And that's the very standard.
And they do that in New York and L.A. just because those are the media markets, and that's the way they kick off the campaign for the online distribution and whatnot. And that's
exactly. And you have to play for a week if you want to be considered for awards. And New York and L.A. make the most sense because of, as you said, they're the biggest markets. And it'll end, you know, it would end up in, you know, pick two cities out of the next 10 biggest ones. So right. San Francisco and Chicago, whatever. And that was fine, but also you have no control over marketing or any of that stuff. And it seemed, that seemed really deflating. It seemed, I mean, it's what people do, but, and I don't have a lot of confidence that this movie's going to be one of, you know, out of the 120 indie movies that come out in a year, this is going to be one of the three that just picks up steam and,
right,
you know, it's just wide not distribution, that kind of right. movie. And that was depressing that it was, you know, I made a movie. I didn't make something that I intended for people to watch on their iPhone, you know. And that's when the producers were the ones who came up with this idea.
Now, we should also say this is before the iPhone 6, which is a much bigger screen.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah. But, you know, it's a movie. It's meant to be seen ideally in a movie theater with no distractions. And you know, I spent a lot of time for little money, nothing. And I didn't, you know, I'm not like the sales agents where I have my heart in this. I don't want
right.
people
the value
to see it.
For you is not just in what the bottom line is.
It's not
it's
a
like
check
how
for
widely
dollars,
how
you know?
Widely disseminated it gets.
Yeah,
and in what manner, I guess.
And that's why we have the Kickstarter thing, because I want this to play in theaters. It would never show at.
Right.
I mean, right? I don't have the list on me, but I mean, there. I know that some of the theaters are like. And these are theaters that reached out to us, like saying, hey, if this is successful, we want to be a part of this. And, you know, Tucson, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Boulder, Colorado, Sonoma, places it would never, ever,
right.
ever play. And now we have a chance for fans of mine in places that I normally don't get to on, like, a comedy tour or ever to go and watch the movie. And I'm really excited about that. And hopefully this is becomes something that people can do in the future.
A good model for yeah. it. The, you know, we'll put a link, obviously, to the Kickstarter. And last I checked, which was last night, you were only like $8,000 away with 12 days or something like that.
Really? I haven't checked. I didn't check today, but I didn't check yesterday either.
You are now less than $6,000 away.
Holy
see
shit.
That? Just
awesome.
Moments of being on this show.
Awesome. That's great.
Look what has happened.
So once that, yeah, once we hit that, we have at least 35 markets, and anybody, if you have a theater or, you know, if anybody is listening to this and wants the movie to come to your town, contact the producers, which there should be information on the Kickstarter, I hope. Don't contact me, but contact the producers, and we will. This is all going in this list of theaters that we have, and which will be out on February 12th. So, and we will happily figure out a way, you know, if it makes financial sense for us to bring it to wherever, whatever town you're in.
And the, go to the Kickstarter just to see not the trailer, but like your...
Oh, the trailer's on there.
The trailer's there, but the video that you did too on Hollywood Boulevard.
How ironic is that? The idea... Well, you'll have to go to the Kickstarter.
But it's good. I mean, that is the thing.
Yeah, we didn't plan that. We thought, okay, because I was in L.A. writing with on this other project, and we're like, okay, we'll shoot this thing because you have to make a video for to explain what you're raising money for. And I was like, yeah, I'm actually in Hollywood. We'll just go meet me on Hollywood and Vine, and you'll see the video. I could not get through it without people coming in, because they don't know who I am. They just see me talking in front of a camera, and they're all taking photos. Somebody who knew who I was started it, but then other tourists are in there like, who's that guy? Wait, they're taking pictures of him? He must be famous. I want to get a picture with him. No idea who I am.
Right.
And I'm in the middle of shooting a video. It was insane. You'll see it. You'll see it's on the Kickstarter thing.
It's just really funny because it also ties in nicely to the whole theme of the movie, which is like, I'm going to have an opportunity to be on television.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is like the lead in this film. Now she's, I don't know, I guess in her early 20s in the movie, right? Maybe
she's 19 in the movie.
Okay. And her attitude towards all of this is almost identical to my 9-year-old daughter, and it scares me that she won't ever grow out of it.
No,
she's like,
that ship has sailed.
She's like, Dad, you're on YouTube? And I'm like, yeah, but it's not what. And she's like, that's like being famous.
Yeah.
I'm like, no.
Well, it is. She's right. You're wrong.
I mean, and this is a
surprise.
This is like the attitude of their generation. But you know.
Wow.
I'm not convinced by – this is like – this is what I do to Janine when she's here, and she hates it. This is – but to a certain extent, it's not inconceivable that in 10, 15, 20 years, there are no aggregated audiences except for massive productions, and then everything else is very small things. Like, for instance, like, you know, like Todd Margaret – we're not talking about like this thing is very successful, but not necessarily by like the standards that we had 25 years ago of what is successful. Because then you had
just 50 million
people watching MASH.
Yeah, being on TV was a success in and of itself, you know.
Because at that time, you couldn't be on TV without an audience of literally 20 million or 15 million because you're on network television. There is no subsidiary channels.
Right.
And that it's just getting more and more stratified, it seems.
Yeah, you just have to – I think the difference now is you have to be – if you want those – to do those things, you have to know that you're not going to make a ton of money. You're not going to – you know, to be on IFC, to do an indie film, you know, I'm thankful for the opportunity because 20 years ago, Todd Margaret never would have been on TV ever. You know, it's just not that kind of idea that would ever get funded. So, you know, I'm quite thankful for that.
But let's also clarify, when you say not a lot of money, it is at that moment for, you know, it is relatively speaking, a good living. But the problem is that it may take you 15 years to get to the moment where you have that. And so when we get paid off in show business, it's supposed to cover all the years that you're not getting paid literally anything. And
I guess that's one way to look at it, I suppose. I mean, the 10 years I put into, you know, getting a lot of verbal abuse, you know, doing stand-up in the back of a country western bar in Falmouth, you know, for $30
under the
table.
Well, it was a bad choice for you to exclusively do that one club for
10 years.
I mean, you really should have branched out. Everybody was saying, David, do a different club. And you're like, no, this is where I'm going to plant my flag, and I'm never going to leave.
That dude came back again? Seriously?
But yeah, I suppose that's part of it, and yeah, I mean, I've done 5 movies, I want to say, that made me some money, and that was it. Those are the only things that really made me a lot of money. you know. I mean, Todd Margaret, I probably lose money when you, all things considered.
All the,
I'm in London
extra expenses of booze in London because it's like 1.5 more. What's the exchange rate?
When I was just over there, which was a couple months ago, it was 1.72.
So you're actually almost paying double for the amount that you consume in terms of alcohol, and that's got a serious.
You know, I'm a heavy drinker, but the beer is better there.
Right.
It's cheaper. It's £3 to £4 for a pint. But yeah, that's like roughly those are New York prices.
Now you shot up upstate in the area where you spend some time as well, right? And do you have like a different relationship with the community now?
No, they haven't seen the movie. I do have a bit.
But just
of
even when you were working there, or I mean,
no, I've been living there. It'll be 7 years in April.
But you weren't necessarily like talking to the town council, were you? I mean,
no, I'm registered to vote there. I vote there, so my vote hopefully makes a difference as opposed to voting in Brooklyn. You know, you know, I. The reason it's set up there, the reason I did this movie, actually, you know, I have a ton of ideas floating around and some scripts that are at various stages of being finished, but this was the idea that I knew that I could shoot the cheapest.
Right.
So that's why I went with this idea for this movie. And I called in a lot of favors, like, you know, the stuff that takes place in the bar at the tap room is the real bar I go to, my wife and I go to, which is, you know, down the road a piece, and that's where we go. And you know, the diner is in Liberty. We shot in Liberty, and you know, these are places where
was
I have
that the real city council chambers.
That's from in Monticello. Yeah, those okay. are yeah. That's for real. That's the Monticello is. I think it's for all of Sullivan County. Is out of Monticello, and that's where we shot. Yeah. And. You know, these are relationships that the dump is the town that's where I go and have been going for almost 7 years. And you know, we just ask people, like, look, we're this little indie film and we don't have a lot of money. Can we, you know, we'll do what we can. And so it was very much a labor of love and people, you know, helping to make it happen, you know, the community. Now, they haven't seen it. So I don't know what their take on it will be.
Are you planning to screen it up there? Or
I would like to.
Are you a little bit concerned?
Really, I do have some trepidation. Yeah, there's a great, beautiful theater in Calicoon, which is in that same general area. And I'd like to show it there just so all the people that worked on it and offered their time and services can see it. But I do have – I hope people see it in the spirit that it's intended and don't see Dave as like it's not. I'm not coming in there with this, you know, broad stroke, you know, generalization of small town living. It's not that at all. And these people are very much their own characters unto themselves.
Now, how come you're not so worried about people from Brooklyn taking offense?
Oh, fuck them! Who cares about a bunch of feckless hipsters? No,
that's why it's better to own a gun, folks. Because if you want to really strike fear in a filmmaker's heart, you gotta be a gun owner. Is that basically the lesson that we're taking from here?
No.
Like, I mean, you crap all over everybody from Brooklyn.
No, not everybody. I live
everybody
in Brooklyn.
Everybody in the movie.
No, that's absolutely not true. The it's all about those kind of that kind of phony altruism. Because I make a point to have. The character you're referring to, Donovan, say this will make us famous. Right. I make it a point that's, you know, and it comes. It's not like this epiphanal moment, but it comes like in his telling everybody why they need to rally around this cause. Da da da. One of the things is, but it's really his chief concern. This will make us famous because he also believes, even though he doesn't state it out loud, like. Caitlin does. He believes they deserve to be famous.
Now, what is it? I mean, you say in the Kickstarter, fame is a disease. I mean, what do you mean by that? I mean, you don't have a problem with the notion of that people who
You know, we're trying to make it kind of it's a trailer trying to make these pithy short
statements.
But it's you know, so I don't want to – it's not the place to elaborate on it. But I think fame –
No, it is. Here it is.
Yeah, in this
oh, right, in this
majority – www.majority.fm with Sam Cedar.
Right.
This is the place where we can elaborate and elongate and bore people. Hopefully we're boring people.
That is actually
– The more I don't get to the point.
Our demo definitely appreciates that.
Yeah.
I had multiple people yesterday who wrote in like, I thought today was going to be boring, and it wasn't, which just gives you a sense of why they tune in. I mean,
well, that's what people come here expecting.
Right.
Yeah, they're trying to take a nap, and this helps them achieve that goal.
That's one of the things that radio and podcasting does. And yeah. People listen. No, but I mean, because you're saying like they think they deserve to be famous, but it's not really so much that they're is it that there are some people who deserve to be famous and some people who don't, or is it just that there's no other drive? There's an absence of another drive.
It's the latter. It's that. That's really what it's about. It's just the shortcuts, all the shortcuts we have in our culture today to being famous. And the idea that, you know, if you in the opening, not the opening scene, but early on, Caitlin's driving her car, there's, you know, they read Us magazine and InStyle and all those things that are you know, it's a cyclical it's they all feed on, you know, Us magazine and InStyle elevates people who are famous for being famous, and they all feed each other. They, if you take any of those elements out, they don't exist. And and she reads, you know, there's a book, Snooki's autobiography is on her car seat, and that's her world.
Right.
And she's looking at these people who don't have any discernible talent and saying, and I think correctly, which is the sad statement that's being made, like, well, I deserve to be famous. I'm bright and vivacious, and I think I'd be a good famous person. I should be famous. You know, that's her mentality.
You know, it's funny because I feel like Howard Stern back before any of this had sort of captured a little bit of that insofar as he would bring people on and allow them.
Well, he facilitated it.
Yes.
Not just captured it.
But yes.
He exploited it.
He exploited it, I think, on some level. But also, I guess it's really just for how do you he always, I think, in my mind, sort of flipped on both sides of that line as to whether or not it was sort of. I'm taking a mirror up to it, or I'm actually sort of taking a mirror up to it, and I'm actually cashing in on the mirror.
Yeah, I don't think he would. He has any qualms about saying that. I mean, that is what he's doing. I'm not judging it. That's
right.
That's good for him.
And so, when is the Mr. Show reunion?
I can't really say anything. Sorry. Because it's not – we don't have anything set in place. But I will
– If something was set in place, when would it be?
If we were to do something, we'd probably shoot – I mean, it would probably be in the April-ish area in the Los Angeles region of the country, I would say.
Bingo. Got a
but
bunch
there's
of hits.
Nothing. There's nothing set.
We can cut that part out. We can cut that.
I can't
part
believe
out,
Perry Mason just... hasn't been used once
hey,
in all of this sort of.
You know what I've just noticed over there? Why you have a
yes.
Todd Margaret framed
that's right.
photo? Where is that from?
I at your launch party,
oh,
which
did
was
you
at
steal
the
that?
Yes, I took that, and I got to say
awesome.
That. I got really, really drunk. Like, you know, I don't go out and drink that much.
No, because you're a thief.
No, well,
people will stop inviting you to places because you steal things that don't belong to you.
Well, wait a second. Now, wait a second. I got permission.
But it's also like I can see it's like stacked against the wall.
Well,
like,
we just moved. We just moved here about a month and a half ago.
That's a pretty sweet photo. I might have to.
It's a great photo, and I was going to put it up on my own Kickstarter. But it may actually be like a reward for the Kickstarter. There you go. I went to that party. It was like the Half King or something like that.
Yeah, it was Half King.
And I got really drunk that night.
Yeah, because the drinks were free.
Because the drinks were free. But also, it's like it's very rare that I get to go out. And I had gotten to that point with my first kid where I was like able to go out. Mm-hmm. And then my second kid came. And so I've got to wait another couple of years.
But this is what you hadn't gone to rehab and you still had the blow problem at that point.
No. I never went to rehab. And the problem persists. And the head of IFC was there. That,
yes.
I can't remember that guy's name.
At the time, he was the head, Evan Shapiro.
Yeah.
And who said one of the – we actually in the very last episode, towards the very end of the very last episode, the Lord Mountford says something to his son. And that is we took it from this press release he – gave about IFC, which is one of the dumbest things I mean, it's just empty. It sounds like it means something, but it's empty and it actually doesn't make any sense, which he said, IFC, we're responsible rebels. And it's such a vapid, empty, illogical, it makes zero sense. And but that he said it, he's very proud of it. And so that's what
– I'm not even sure I know what it's supposed to project.
You know, cool, I guess. I don't know. But,
cool, but not,
not too cool.
Not crazy.
Right, exactly. we're like rebels, but then the word preceding rebel negates being a rebel.
Well, it was basically what I was doing. I was going out and getting rebels. Crappy drunk, but I still got home in time to make sure I woke up in the morning to send the kid to
rebel.
Schools. But
that's what Lord Mountford says to his son. He's like, when he finds out all the shit that he's done.
I specifically asked the guy, I said, what are you doing with these pictures? And he said, I don't know. And I said, well, is there I'm going to take one. And he just sort of like, okay.
Yeah, well, that's because you were being a responsible rebel.
I was being a responsible rebel. I asked first, and then I took it.
That's what gets you the goods.
So what is next? I mean, aside from the Mr. Show reunion that you're definitely doing in April, what else is happening?
No, please don't. Well, the reason we have to do it in April is because I go to.
Where will it air?
I can't say anything, okay. and I really truly can't.
All right. But, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If it was to air, would it be on something that could be expressed in three letters?
No. Maybe yes. Maybe no.
Okay.
It remains to be seen. We feel very confident we will figure out a place to go with this. And we are, out of my own pocket, I go to LA every other week and I write with Bob and some of the other writers. And we're hoping that this pays off.
Okay.
We imagine it will. There's a lot of interest in it. And we'll see. But I have to be in London on May 5th for Todd Margaret, Series 3. That's all locked in.
And you're shooting it on one day.
Yeah, while I'm on the plane.
Just May 5th.
I go there for the last 3 weeks of pre-production, and then we shoot the end of May, June, and early July.
Oh, that's exciting.
I'm really excited to do it because I get to play a different character. Todd Margaret's a really fun, goofy guy to play. He's so stupid. He's just one of the dumbest people on the planet. And I don't want to give anything away, but the initial character I play that becomes Todd Margaret is quite different. So it'll be fun to do. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
And it's a crazy story. It's and again, I don't think it's ever been done.
What is it again?
Nice try.
All right.
I will say this, and I'll probably be saying this quite a bit as leading up to the airing of it, whenever it does air. It will make zero sense unless you see the first two series. So don't watch it unless you've seen it, because it will make no sense. It won't be fun. It won't be interesting or entertaining. It'll be confusing.
Brilliant marketing ploy.
That came after the fact.
What do you mean that came after the fact?
It's not like we intended to figure out a way to make people rewatch.
Well, no, that wouldn't be. That wouldn't be that. That really wouldn't actually be a brilliant marketing ploy.
Right. Then you'd be saying it sarcastically.
Right. No. What?
Yeah.
Well, David, now I've got some. I'm going to do a little more. I know you're checking your phone.
No, that's all right.
Oh, you want to hear?
I have an old school watch.
Do you want to hear this?
Can you guys see that? That's not a phone, is it? It's that thing on my wrist.
It's a very nice watch.
So old school. Doesn't even have.
And he
doesn't even have.
This is how infected you are.
Guy tweeted a picture of that watch.
I know you're checking your phone.
Is that the new iWatch from Apple?
Look how old school my watch.
Thanks. It's a Lambretta.
Yeah.
What?
Are we going to do some sounds, Sam?
Yeah. Well, here.
Let's go.
Here's David can help us with this. This is the American Family Association's Sandy Rios. She has a radio show, which I think is probably far more popular than this one. Explains on her radio show that President Obama was up to something really nefarious in the State of the Union, like beyond all the other stuff.
Like conspiracy theory stuff, Alex Jones, Truth War, InfoWars type stuff?
What he was up to?
No. I mean, I'm saying, is this lady that kind of crazy lady, like chemtrails conspiracy thing?
No, she's American Family Association is just a right-wing.
No, I understand. I understand what that is.
Well, listen to the sound. We'll find out what exactly.
You be the judge, Dave.
You be the judge.
Right. You know, the other thing he said that I caught, he has done this before. You know, there are five pillars of Islam, and he used the term pillars again. In his speech last night, I'd forgotten about it, and
so
I don't even know where it is. I've got so many pages in my hand here.
Yeah, I'm right.
But it's just really interesting. Language can actually give us some insight, choices of words.
There you go.
Yeah, so I'm right. So she's a nut. She's like an Alex Jones, InfoWars, chemtrail truther.
If God is creating the chemtrails, yes.
Yeah.
More of a God tinge to it.
It's the word pillar, of course, everyone associates with Islam.
We're going to pillars of the new economy and Wallahu Akbar.
What about plinths? Aren't there plinths of Islam?
Of Islam? I do notice that he's installed those pillars in front of the White House. Have you noticed those that he put up there?
Yeah, unbelievable.
It's coming, folks.
It's a Shia strategy.
Can I tell you my favorite and what to me encapsulates, and I've thought about this it just pops in my head every once in a while, what encapsulates the difference between Republicans and Democrats in one action was when Reagan moved into the White House and he gleefully stripped the solar panels off.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was like, yeah, fuck those solar panels that Democrat put in. That's where we started to turn in a very blatant, comical way. Yeah. It'll be tragical, tragicomic. But the fact that that was his first action, like, get those stupid solar panels out of there. And everybody's like, yeah, you showed them.
Right. The one thing is, like, we're going to piss this. I'm going to take an otherwise completely meaningless, if not just outright detrimental action, just to show liberals that we think they're a-holes.
Yeah.
Well, that was like the styrofoam vote in like the congressional cafeteria,
yes,
where, you know, the Democrats wanted to replace styrofoam.
They had already replaced styrofoam in the congressional cafeteria when the Republicans got
voted
back
to bring
into
it
office.
Back, right.
They voted to bring back styrofoam.
Right.
That's more of the same kind of attitude.
No, I was saying it's a continuation of exactly what you're talking about. That was
just the glee, the smug glee that the Republicans had, like, you know, bunch of limp-wristed liberal fag.
I'd be wearing a sweater in this White House.
Yeah.
Like, get those panels.
No
off, pussies.
Sweaters here.
It's just perfect. It encapsulates the difference perfectly to me.
Yeah, it seems like it's gotten worse, too.
It has gotten worse, but that was the first thing.
We didn't put them back on also encapsulates the difference, too.
What was that, with Obama?
Or Clinton.
Well,
it's not like
Clinton.
He came back and
because
said,
they're
I'm putting
they're
the solar
sentrance.
Panels.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. That it's a continuation of – anyway, yeah, just –
No, you don't have to worry about you getting too much into politics.
Let me just say that the Arab Spring is failing not for lack of bandwidth, but for the lack of human understanding that can only be forged when someone is 15 minutes late for breakfast and you say, thank you for being late.
One of the highest
I want $1 million for coming up with that thought and disseminating that
exactly.
thought. I want $1 million.
Matt Taibbi is actually having a contest asking people what the fuck that means.
I would imagine Hamilton Nolan. Nolan.
The guy at Gawker. He'll be able to figure it out. But it involves connectivity and a flattening environment and shifting geodynamics.
What a joke. I got in an argument with my mom about Tom Friedman. And she's like, I love Tom Friedman. I'm like, how? Why?
Yeah, actually, seriously, why?
She didn't have. She just thought he had some really interesting things to say. And it's just garbage. It's meaningless garbage. And some of it is false.
You know what I think, actually, one of the reasons that some people really love him so much is because – and people always joke about the cab. You know, I got on a cab in Amman and blah, blah, blah. I think that the fact that he uses those anecdotes in articles that always just end up validating people's prejudices anyways I think that that's a big part of his popularity.
Well, that's not just him. That's left or right, you know, speaking to – I think it's true,
but it's a little more subtle. Like there's this way in which he makes people feel like, now I'm an expert in Jordan because I read Thomas Friedman's column. And it just so happens to coexist with this sort of vague.
He's in the New York Times, okay, right. And so he has all the cachet of the New York Times, and he's had it for years,
right.
which gets you to a certain place, and then.
But he's also he doesn't take a stand on anything.
Oh, he did during the Iraq War. I mean,
and on globalization. That's how he figures
and
out.
On globalization.
Right.
I mean,
you're right. You're right.
He's just obtuse enough that if you don't spend a lot of time dealing with these issues, that you could say, like, what he's saying must make sense. I mean, he's a New York Times columnist. So if you don't understand what he's talking about, the vast majority of people just assume, like, that's on me.
Well, that
not on him.
That's the same can be said of David Brooks, too.
Yes, but I mean,
he's in the same genre.
But Tom Friedman barely identifies as he's just sort of like liberal-ish. He doesn't promote it in the way that Brooks does. Like,
Brooks promotes being
like
a conservative.
Tom Friedman never talks about, you know, like liberal ideas, promoting liberal ideas. Brooks will self-identify as a conservative.
Right.
Tom Friedman will, if pressed, will say, you know, probably liberal-leaning, but he doesn't in his columns ever use that, self-identify.
Yeah, he'd make less money. He'd be less popular and make less money.
Right. But, I mean, of course, for him, you know, he's married to a billionaire heiress of a mall fortune.
Mall chain.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's
like
not.
So well-deserved.
Oh, yeah. He's earned it. I mean, come on. Let's play one more sound. This was one of the things that President Obama has announced. Doesn't go far enough in my estimation, but still obviously a good thing. And isn't necessarily something that he can do without congressional support, but it's good at least to get the marker out there, is promoting the idea of free community college, which, of course, we should extend to state universities, again, return to that. But here is how the think tank on Fox and Friends responded to it. This, I think, you're going to hear primarily Steve Ducey's voice. Ducey.
Here's the thing that really bothers me about this.
What?
I made my final two college tuition payments about 2 weeks ago.
Well, you're speaking like from the heart of a dad, and moms out there are feeling the same way. Wait a second. Now we're paying for more college tuition for somebody else to the tune of $60 billion.
What a great deal, but who's going to pay for that?
But it's only – we're talking about, Steve, your family did not go choose junior college. So you would not be eligible.
Had it been free, Brian, they might have.
Right.
That's a bad thing?
Yes. I mean,
these people are insane. There's such an illogic at work here, twisted Mobius strip of reasoning. I mean,
no, but you're missing the point where it says that somebody else is going to pay for it because they're saying to their audience is you are going to be on the hook again for paying for the lazy people's college.
Right.
That's what the message comes through, but they don't – you know, it's early in the morning, so they don't want to say it explicitly because they don't want anybody to choke
who
on
who goes
eggs.
To community college?
Right. Of course.
The poors. Right.
Yeah. Of course. The poors and the not whites.
And the not white, right.
Right. Well, so do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song this week?
We do.
All right. I should just explain to you. We have one of our listeners, Jimmy Reefer Cake, is an ardent supporter of legalizing marijuana.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
No,
because it's usually usually when they have really clever names like that, they're anti-marijuana. Like when they use like puns in their name, they're usually against medical marijuana or marijuana.
Well, we have another listener, Jimmy Non Reefer Cake, that is
not
against...
quite as clever, but okay, okay. Yeah. What? I get it. Oh, because of the name, right?
Jimmy has a blog called All the Hypocrisy, and each week, virtually each week, for years, he has been sending in a song of the week that was supposed to be sort of wrapping up something in the news of the week, but has been increasingly about his, and I don't know what this one is about, increasingly about his notion of a social, of a left libertarianism, I don't know. So what's this one called?
This one is called Horse Carriage Banning Nonsense.
So basically, you picked a great time to give a completely incoherent introduction to who this guy is.
Okay, horse carriage.
Well, you might want to explain to the listeners that that's something Bill de Blasio is.
Yes, Bill de Blasio.
The New York mayor.
Thank you, David. Yeah. Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York. New York City. For those of you who don't know, who didn't see the movie Arthur.
When you get caught between the moon and New York City, I can't remember.
I want to see if you can go further. Dudley Moore.
Let me tell you that I worked at a movie theater when I was in high school in Atlanta, and Arthur had a very long run there, months and months. I mean, it was probably 4 months long, and you know, you're seeing, you know, in a 8-10 hour workday. You have to open the doors, and I had to listen to that song roughly 4 or 5 times a day, 5 days a week for months and months and months and months.
Was that like the early 1980s?
Yeah, this would have been 81, I think. 81 or 82.
I worked at a 5 and 10 downtown Worcester, and they had that on the cycle on the AM radio, that song.
Christopher Cross.
Yes.
Yep, that's who did it.
Arthur loved to be driven around the park. He's very wealthy, and he loved to take a carriage ride through the park, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so we have these horse and carriages, and Bill de Blasio has said that he is going to ban them. I'm not sure why it's taking so long or what the hang-up is.
They needed to – I think a part of it has been to make sort of alternative plans for people who make a living doing these rides. There actually is
it's a very iconic thing in New York.
And it's an iconic thing, so people really
don't
like it.
But they're saying that the horses are not treated in the best of ways.
What they should do, just supplant them with people. Mm-hmm. And so this is Jimmy Reefer Cake responding to the idea that those might be banned.
I guess the dude in charge is Steve Nislick.
Oh, that's too bad.
God dang rich New York City prick.
That's a shame.
While they never told you so, we always knew it. At all the hypocrisy, we see right through it. So my, for goodness sake, won't you listen to Joe 30-Pack and Mr. Reefer Cake? I've never been a fan of any goddamn friggin' band, no. And I'm grateful for all my libertarian-leaning fans, but not that Heritage Foundation static or the small testicle gun fanatic, 'cause those are the only ones you see on TV. Not a libertarian socialist son of a gun like me. I'm sorry that I lost myself again. My original point, I hope you understand. That I'm tired of this horse carriage banning holier than thou, deep poop waiting. Tired of this horse carriage banning, liberal defaming, priority shifting, hypocriting, god dang nonsense.
You know, Sam, you really, you know. It doesn't take too long. Just screen the song before you come in and see if it's worth playing.
Hold up. I just want to say Jimmy Reefer Cake regularly accuses me of being condescending, of having characters based off of him, which may or may not be true. But that was condescension, my friends, right there. That no, that response to that song. No,
no, that's
straight up criticism.
Yeah, that's straight up.
Yeah, that's passive aggressive.
Okay, passive aggressive. Right. Fair it's enough. Well, let's put it in context here.
No,
let's understand. It's a matter of taste. Some, you know, we're not saying
that was not Jimmy's best song either from a musical standpoint.
I bet it's not his worst.
Or
I actually think that was his worst, and I could be a little bit harder on him potentially than the rest of the people here, but I think that that was definitely his worst.
I mean, I think
Jimmy lives in Maine. I mean, David should know this. So there isn't like
why should I know that
for people outside of the city that come
up? You said obviously a New Yorker when you heard the Carriage Band theme of the song. I thought you said a guy from New York. And it's like, no, he's not. I have no idea why he's
the only people who are mad about the Carriage Band are the people who make a living off of it and people who do not live in New York City.
But they also like, the idea that somehow this is overreaching, the ban on these carriages is overreaching. I mean, what is he suggesting that anybody should be able to ride horse and buggies throughout the city? I mean, you need a license to have a car, and the car needs to be registered. It's not overreaching. Well, they're not going out of our base.
Personally, they should also ban the use of horses by the NYPD because they put them in very dangerous situations. They use them specifically as tools to, like, silence large masses of people, which to me is a dangerous situation for a horse to be in. All it takes is for one horse to get nervous and set them off.
Sam and I saw that in person at one of the marches.
Yeah,
when they were starting to
83 or 82?
No, it was the...
No, Iraq, 93. Yeah. Wait.
That's where... In fact, I had a guy in hits. I had to cut it. But do you remember when we were there, there was a very androgynous look. I still don't know whether it was a man or a woman, but who was... When all this stuff was happening, they were taking the horse. I know there's a name for it, but they were like cantering the horses into people.
It's one of the protests in New York City against the Iraq War.
Yeah, and Sam and I were the only ones there for the Iraq War, so we were really drowned out. But there were, you know, millions of people, and they were at one point taking the horses and using them to, you know, ride them into people. It was really shitty and dangerous and awful. And then this person who was right near us, we had it on camera, was. In this tone of voice, and I have to understand there are people screaming and yelling. There's people on PA systems. There's cops. There's protesters. And then this person
thousands of people.
Yeah, this person tried to get this chant going. Now, you have to remember, this is chaos, and people are screaming and yelling. And in this voice, at this volume, amongst all that, what is this for and why are you doing it? What is this for and why are you doing it? What is this for and why are you doing it? And it was made us laugh in the middle of all this awful stuff. We were like, "What is this person?" And it's just chaos, and people were being slammed in. What is this for? And why are you doing it? What is this for? And why are you doing it? What is this? And I had a person in hits when all the chaos starts saying that, but I ended up having to cut.
I think there's that guy at every protest.
Like, but it's like really... literally yelling as the cops are trying to go, like, you're being unreasonable.
But saying it at this volume and this high register, what is this for and why are you doing it? And trying to get everybody, like, come on, everybody. Let the world know.
I think this is ill-advised. Come on.
I remember
that. Oh, my God.
We had it as somebody – it was on camera. We had – because we were filming everything.
Videotaping.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just shoot through a couple IMs, and then we'll wrap this thing up.
Do you remember also in that same protest, the Viper? There was somebody – the Dodge Viper or some like – somebody was coming down, whatever it was, Park Avenue. I can't remember what street we were on, Madison maybe. But there was at some point a guy, you know, like it's cordoned off. And it's – remember a Viper somehow, the Dodge Viper, silly sports car, trying to drive down south down, you know.
Yeah, there were literally hundreds of thousands of people. It was like it had to
guy
have been
– a sports car like made a wrong turn.
In the 40s or 50s near the UN, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And – and then I think there was also an attitude like, get out of the way.
He didn't stick his head out of the car and go, what is this for and why are you doing it?
Bush and Chains.
I'm going to start using that myself.
Looks like majority FM hero Bill Clinton neck deep in international pedophile prostitution ring. Republican Senator Marco Rubio preparing for 2016 run. Umar Shami, yes, for the first time in a year and a half, been able to listen to the show live. Matt and Michael do an excellent job. You should give them more money. No, thank you.
Or some money.
Matt and the BK.
How about some?
Continued from yesterday. The public square in front of the main Mormon church in Salt Lake City is patrolled by LDS hired security. They have harassed same-sex couples who kiss or are holding hands on this public property. International Herald app is working great. Listening from Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Another movie recommendation. Oh, you're supposed to give me a movie recommendation, David.
It's movies,
yeah.
Come on, man.
Oh,
hits. I want to see it.
Well, let me think outside of
Your.
I liked Foxcatcher. I'm in the WGA and SAG, so I get a bunch of screeners. And of all the things I've seen, that's been my favorite movie.
Foxcatcher.
So Foxcatcher. Yeah.
I have not seen
the one
that
about yet. The wrestlers, right?
Yeah, it's based on it is not just based on a true story. It is a telling of this true story, but the acting is just Steven Carell is fantastic. I mean, they're all good, but Steven Carell is just fucking fantastic. He's so good.
Foxcatcher.
The acting is great.
I gotta wait until it comes on, streaming. But what? What did you think of Boyhood?
I have not seen that yet. I heard it's great. I will see that in the coming days. I have a stack of stuff I need to get through, but yeah, I liked Foxcatcher has been my favorite so far.
Charles Dongwater, great interview with David Cross. I liken your grammar debate mid interview to a mechanic trying to change your tires while you're driving. E. Greg, I'm going to do it's brief now. An ICM poll taken by the British Telegraph after the Danish cartoons in 2006, 40% of British wanted Sharia law to be implemented. Okay, whatever.
That doesn't mean any. I'll get to it.
But give me your source.
They might even mean that they want, as an example, Islamic finance, which is in some way whatever.
Yeah, I'll say what the later source is and what the context
Frederick
is.
Frederick Kine College. Sam, I'm great to hear you back with Cliff. I got a car accident Sunday listening to Michael interview him. No one was hurt. Otherwise, I wouldn't joke about it. I'm not superstitious, but next time you're away, let's let Matt be the one conversing with Cliff. Dr. Radmanthes, regarding Iran, Sam, I'd like to remind everybody that Turkey and Brazil negotiated a deal to remove nuclear materials from Iran 5 years ago. Obama quashed the deal, opposing it, in my mind, primarily because the U.S. didn't negotiate it.
Well, that was not the
That's speculative.
Reason. That is really speculative.
Bassi 402, Heisenberg. I'm not sure what that means. Heisenberg. Doesn't cold weather by itself cause the... Well, I don't
think. You really screen these.
Crystal Count. Didn't Obama get all the benefit of the doubt back in the aughts, saving his most populous progressive State of the Union since the 08 campaign for a post-election disaster? Final phase when major legislation accomplishment is finally off the table. It's hard not to suspect this would have been different if the Democrats had kept half or all of Congress last year. Oh, I have no doubt about it. I have no doubt about
it. I'd still be advocating for Sharia.
Yeah.
Let me be clear.
One of the pillars.
Let me be clear.
Mutt, 1126, what are your thoughts about Larry Wilmore's nightly show? I think it's brilliant and needs to be an hour long. The best of the shows with John Oliver coming second. What do you think the Daily Show spinoffs are so much better than the Daily Show? David?
I don't agree with that. And I haven't seen Larry's show, but I assume it's good.
You know what it reminds me of is like I only watched, one.
I don't watch television, Sam. I don't. I read nonfiction books.
It's like politically incorrect, sort of. I mean, it's set up as a panel like that. Mutt, 1126. I'm starting to feel like Jimmy Rieferkeek needs to be not playing songs for your show because it just sounds like he's promoting his blog. Nathan Ray.
Just catching on to this?
Oh, my God. My kids are freaked out because the bad guy from Alvin and the Chipmunks is on Daddy's boring YouTube show. Chipmunks.
That's funny.
Chipmunks 3 is almost unwatchable, but the moment when Dave Cross says, "I've got my eye on you," puts an eagle head on backwards and walks away, gets me every time. I think he's one of the best comedy villains of all time.
God bless you, Nathan Ray.
A Square. Sam, can't listen live today, but looking forward to the discussion with Cliff. I knew about the government's persecution of Lady Day, but I didn't. Thanks for that guest and his insights on the farcical drug war.
Talking about
Billie Holiday. Appreciate he highlighted her courage by singing Strange Fruit over and over again. As I am to your show, when Ferguson protests were going on, today's Strange Fruit lay on the streets of our cities as cops kill the same number of black men weekly that got lynched in the old days. DX Fool. Hi, guys. Speaking of shows with Jeffrey Tambor, Amazon Prime is streaming Transparent for free all day tomorrow and offering the service for only $72 in a one-day sale to new customers. Order through the Majority Report kickback. .com, of course. And I enjoyed Mr. Cross and Disney Channel work.
I've never done.
You're thinking of Andy Kindler.
Yeah, I've never done Disney Channel.
Teacher Lauren, hello, Majority Report. Guess who is now officially certified to mold and manipulate the pliable young minds of children? Watch out. Oh, congratulations on your becoming a teacher.
Monticello is this.
The seat of Sullivan County. Holy crap. Hi, neighbor. Now I really need to see this movie.
Okay.
She's going to be pissed. Cheney shot the dog. David Cross, you're one of the funniest living comedians. I love your comedy albums.
Please.
Question, before you sat down, why didn't you ask Sam, can I use this chair?
Because then I'd have to pay myself a residual.
Bob Flav, I have a movie pick for you. It's 2007. It's called The Grand.
Oh, yeah.
A movie about the toker porn. If Dave was still there, ask him if he remembers anything about making the movie. I loved it.
I had a blast doing that movie. That was an improv heavy movie where there was just a scenario, and then we actually played.
Who else is in that movie? I don't remember.
Ray Romano, Cheryl Hines, Chris Parnell, Judy Greer, Gabe Kaplan, of all people, who
He's
plays
just
like
professional
a poker.
Yeah, player too, right?
Who else is in there? And then a bunch of people playing themselves from the poker world, Jason Alexander, I know I'm going to leave some. Oh, Woody Harrelson, a bunch of people. It was so much fun to do, so much fun.
You know, I should say
Zach Penn wrote and directed it. Although you know, it was an outline like a Christopher Guest movie. There's like a 20-page outline, and then it was all improvised. And we actually played a real poker game, and if you know, you went out busted, or that was your character was busting, and then you'd go, and the movie progressed from that point based on how we did this tournament. It was really cool, and one of the highlights of my life, absolute top five moments of my 50 years, I got to have dinner with Zach Penn, who's the writer-director, who's friends with Werner Herzog, who's one of the most amazing people alive. And I was, you know, like a 2-hour dinner. It was just the three of us. And just hearing him shooting the shit with Werner Herzog and it was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I should say, you know, the last time I think I saw you was in Vegas when, I go to this tort convention.
That was
twice
crazy.
A year.
Yeah.
It was so random. I was up by like $400 for the first time in ages. I am walking. It's like 11:30. I'm like, I'm going to bed ahead. I walk by this craps table and I'm like hearing people just cheering. And I'm thinking like, I'm just going to look and see what's going on there. And it was you and Arnett, and Ted Sarandos from Netflix.
Yeah.
And you'd been at the NAB, I guess, to announce Arrested Development.
No, I think this was when was this? Was this last spring?
No, it was like 2 years
ago. Oh, okay. Then that was what we were doing, yeah.
And we ended up playing. I lost everything I was up, and I don't think I've won in the probably four times I've been to Vegas since then because of that. Like, I've lost.
So you're saying I'm the cooler?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I mean, it's possible.
Sure.
It hadn't occurred to me until it's taken this long for me.
I ended up like $1,100 for my weekend there. And you know what I did with the money? I just threw it in a fountain.
You went to the front desk. Can I have this all in silver dollars, please? I would like to throw it into the water.
Can I place this outside of Sam Cedar's room, but can we tape it to the floor so you can't pick it up?
I have hired a helium balloon to just float outside of his window holding this money. Bushy in chains. Oh, look, it's the curmudgeon report sounding off about social media again.
I fully admit it. I'm a cranky old Luddite man.
Yorick, does Reefer Cakes even realize that libertarian socialist is an oxymoron? Made for Majority FM. Is it just me or does it appear that Sam wants to karate chop Mike in the throat? Personally, I think you should pay Matt and Mike less for David. For David, any advice for folks trying to disentangle themselves from religion and a cultural identity created by religion?
Yeah, just do it. I mean, what? Don't stop or stop believing stuff that's made up by men from 2,000 years ago.
There you go. Cyberstrike, awesome show today, David. You're hilarious.
Well, I'll be the judge of that.
Not to confuse, Jimmy Rufagate is a true libertarian. He takes the arbitrary status quo, in this case, the niche horse and buggy industry, and acts as if it was a God-given right that is sacrosanct and can't be changed, all while ignoring the actual policy outcome at issue. Jay, I am actually on the phone because I want to ask David Cross about his wife's Uncle Larry.
Oh, what is the question?
Hold on. Let's see if I don't know. Bear with me one second. I have not even... I didn't even get to the phone system.
Wow, this is fascinating. I'm looking at the what Sam's manipulating on the computer.
Jay, are you there?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Now I'm all befuddled because it says you weren't going to pick up for 16 minutes. So I was prepared to stay all day. Hi, thank you. Excellent show today, and Sam, excellent show.
Oh, all right. I thought you were talking to me originally.
David Cross.
Yeah.
Have you met Larry Tamblyn?
Yeah, of course. He's my uncle-in-law. I guess, do you have uncles-in-law? No.
No, it'd be your uncle. No. Own it. It's your uncle.
No, I don't feel comfortable with that, no. Yeah, of course I've met him, yeah.
Okay, have you seen him play?
Yeah, he, at my wedding...
Wait, can you be more specific?
Oh, sorry, yeah. Larry Tamblyn is one of the original Standells.
Oh, there you go.
And they just recorded a new album. I know that. Yeah, Larry is my father-in-law, Russ Tamblyn, who people are familiar with from numerous, you know, West Side Story and Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and Twin Peaks and The Haunting and hundreds of films, as well as the increasingly Poor Decisions, Todd and Margaret. Yeah, his brother is that the talent in that family is insane.
So you get along with your in-laws?
Oh, very, very well. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, they're awesome. They're pretty awesome. But yeah, Larry. So at our wedding, stole an idea that Sam originally had, where we had Yo La Tengo play at our wedding, and then Larry played played with Yo La Tengo. Ba-dump.
There you go.
So, yeah, I've seen him play.
Well,
he's great.
Thanks for the call.
Hey, have a good weekend.
All right, Jay. Talk to you later.
Somebody else we know not only also had Yo La Tengo play at their wedding, but did it had the wedding at the exact same location.
That is a little – that I
literally
– that to me was a little weird.
When we went to that wedding – Less than a year after our marriage.
Yeah.
We went to a wedding with the same band at the same location upstate. I literally shot B-roll for our wedding video that I hadn't picked up from our wedding.
Yeah.
So anything that we were missing, like we didn't get every guest that we wanted for our wedding video or some cutaways, I could do at this other wedding.
I'm curious. How did you feel about that? Did you feel like, well, that's a...
I think my wife was a little bit more like, thought it was more problematic. I thought like, well, it doesn't bother me because when we experienced it, it was our wedding. It was this is completely new.
Yeah, I can see
I just
see
thought
that.
Like, if it's okay with them, it's not like it devalues our wedding.
It doesn't. I think if anything, it almost devalues theirs.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if they're okay with it, like they're looking at this and going, like, this seems so familiar. And it's because they're thinking about our. I was like, it's, you know, I have no problem with it. Yeah. You know, but I just thought, like, it's not something that I would want to do because I would want this to be like, this is a new memory for us.
A Sam Cedar original.
Lawyer Matthew. speaking of the wedding, love David's Eye of the Tiger at your wedding.
Oh, that's right.
David sang Eye of the Tiger with Yo La Tengo at my wedding. And it was.
I think that was Benjamin as well. And Glazer, too.
They sang something different, I think. I can't remember what they sang.
Okay.
But Carl Sagan, we're wrapping up here. Tofutti, it tastes exactly like ice cream.
That's a Mr. Show reference.
Hey, Johnny, David, do you ever run into Larry the Cable Guy after your public spat with him? Also, your Squiggles bit is one of my favorite stand-up bits.
Oh, thank you. No, I have not run into him, but I did a movie. It never came out. I think it was straight to DVD. With what's the other guy? One of the other blue-collar guys they tour with.
Jeff Foxworthy?
No, it's Call Me Tater Salad, that guy, Ron White. And he's one of the guys, and he had been quoted as saying, if I ever see that, you know, motherfucker, I'm going to snap his neck into that little pencil, whatever. He said some, you know, disparaging things. But
and he had you over for a glass of Chablis.
Yeah, well, we did this movie together. We were at the same hotel bar in a suburb of Detroit, Michigan, and he never said any of that. Never said, you know, he didn't.
Did you talk to him or?
No, I was right around. I mean, I was at the bar.
He expressed a lot of
vitriol and said what he would do if he saw me. But then he did see me, and he didn't do anything. Well, I didn't invite it. I didn't. I mean, the guy's, you know, twice as big as me. I wasn't like, hey, man, I'm over here if you want to kick my ass. But I just sat there drinking with some friends, and he.
Well, did it occur to you at the moment where you're like, oh, there's that guy who threatened to kill me, or did you just play it off? I mean, did you articulate it out loud at that moment?
No, I didn't.
But you were mentally conscious of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But you didn't say to your friends, like, he has threatened.
Maybe I did. I don't know. I don't know.
That would have been awesome if that shit went down. I mean, not. I don't want you to see your head snapped or whatever, but, you know, it would have been interesting.
It would have been interesting.
And the final I Am of the week, ladies and gentlemen. hey, can David recommend some bars in and or around Monticello? My mom lives in Lumberland on 97 by the Delaware River. Mm-hmm. This is a great broad IM to finish the week with. I love that area. Check out Mongop Falls Reservoir on 42, which is between Port Jervis and Monticello.
Yep.
I fear that radical Muslims who want to control the Middle East and ultimately the world would love to see In God We Trust stricken from our money and replaced with In Muhammad We Trust.
In Muhammad. Yes,
we
so,
get those IMs too.
I can recommend there's a couple great ones. I'd say my two favorites, and there are a bunch of great ones. One is right off of 97, and it's called the BVH, Barryville. It's a Barryville sports bar, but they've won a number of times the Wing Bowl in New York, and they have tremendous wings, really creative flavored buffalo wings, and Johnny Hots are my particular favorite, but that place is great. John, who runs the bar there, is an awesome guy. And then in Yulin, where we shot Hits, there's a place called Baker's Tap Room, and that's right on off of Yulin, and they also great food, really great food, fun, great atmosphere. They're friends, and I recommend both those places.
Make sure you tune in next week, where we're going to do a report on some roadside diners in the Finger Lakes region.
Also, Big Kev's Barbecue is great. If you're traveling around, if you're going to on 55, I believe, is there. 17B. So if you see Big Kev's, eat there. They've got great barbecue.
Will you take 17B instead of like 23B? I'm joking. All right.
I would listen to that podcast, by the way. I would totally listen to it.
David, I'm not going to read that one. All right, folks. We will be back next week. See you on Monday. David Cross, thank you so much for joining us. If you want to check out the benefit. There's all sorts of like great perks on your Kickstarter thing. Like if you're a David Cross fan, I hope people have gone there.
Oh, there's tons of stuff.
But there's like stuff that, I mean, I was even thinking of like doing that thing where you got to come to my house and read a couple of chapters.
Somebody did that already. I've done.
Oh, it's taken?
Somebody took that. Yeah. Hopefully, it's not a difficult place to get to. I have no idea. Some of these things I threw up there, and I was like, I just didn't think about the ramifications of like, what if this really happens. So Yeah, I'm going to be reading from, I can't remember whose book I said. Paris Hilton,
there was
maybe,
a couple of
Crystal
them
Palin
you put in there.
So I'm going to go to somebody's house and read from.
We have a Sam Cedar membership for this show.
Nobody cares.
Where? what's that?
Whatever you're about to say.
You're right. All right, folks. We will see you next week.
Mom! 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 Why did you do that to me?
Yep.
Final IM Genius says, I didn't realize David Cross was Amber Tamblyn's husband. Really? Loved her in Joan of Arcadia. Think her best is yet to come. Can't wait. All right, folks. See you on Monday. David, thank you very much. Bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. The months shifted into you while I shifted in and out. Pay to play. I know somehow.